what we learned investigating the death of Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez.
It sounds like you ran almost every theory to its end.
Binge all 8 episodes of Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. A little bit later this hour, I want to hear from our LGBTQ listeners who played organized sports in high school or college and about how your sexual identity related to your relationships with your teammates. This in the wake of yesterday's historic announcement by the first active NFL player, Carl Nassib, the defensive end of the Las Vegas Raiders, that he's gay. He's gotten tremendous support on social media from other pro athletes. But there have been very few in American team sports who have come out. So we're going to be talking again with LGBTQ listeners who played organized sports on teams in high school or college about what the interactions were among your teammates related to your sexual identity. That's later this hour. Right now, we turn our attention to the New York City mayor's race, where there are 13 Democratic candidates in the primary, 2 Republicans who are running. Unlike Los Angeles, it is partisan. The mayor's office in New York City and Los Angeles, it's nonpartisan. There is not a party primary, so to speak. Joining us to talk about what's at stake and how the candidates are attempting to differentiate themselves is Bloomberg News New York Bureau Chief Shelley Banjo. Shelley, great to have you with us today. We'll try and get Shelley back momentarily. Also joining us, Rick Pildes, who's professor of constitutional law at the NYU School of Law. Professor Pildes, great to have you with us.
Very happy to be here.
Ranked choice voting is being introduced in New York City to this election for the first time. By definition, it's the largest American city to have this. It's the largest American city. But what are some of the other places where ranked choice has been used to decide elections?
Well, this is very interesting because just in the last several years, voters have chosen to adopt ranked choice voting in a number of places, including in red states as well as blue states. So for example, voters in Alaska recently chose to have ranked choice voting for their elections coming up in 2022. Voters in Utah adopted ranked choice voting in about 23 cities recently, including their biggest city, Salt Lake City. Voters in Maine a few years back chose to adopt ranked choice voting. So this is one of the few areas of voting rights policy right now where we're seeing at least some degree of bipartisan support, at least among voters, for this change.
Let's talk about how it works. So when voters cast their vote, they're not just voting for one candidate?
That's right. In New York City, where I am, and I voted early yesterday, we are able to rank our top 5 preferences in order for the mayor's race, for example. And this is actually very attractive in many respects for voters. For one thing, you may favor somebody very strongly, but you worry that maybe they're not likely to end up getting elected. Normally you have to calculate, should I vote for someone else, even though I prefer this other person? With ranked choice voting, you can rank that person first on your ballot. And if they don't get through the process, if they don't get enough votes, your votes will end up going for your second choice candidate. Especially in a race that's so important as the New York City mayor's race right now and with so many candidates, I certainly was happy to have this option.
So for those voting in the Republican primary, there are only 2 candidates, so they would just vote their first and second choice, or could they add they couldn't add Democrats for the other 3 spots?
Well, no, they won't have that on the ballot. You could write in candidates, but no, they will just have the candidates on the ballot who have qualified for the Republican primary.
And so let's talk about how the counting. So if you don't have a candidate get 50% plus one vote, a simple majority victory. You go to the second round. You mentioned that the candidate who gets the lowest number of first place votes, that person is then removed and that person's votes are redistributed?
Right. The idea behind ranked choice voting is you want candidates to go into office who have a majority of the support from the voters, instead of candidates who might, in a contested race like this, if you have 30% of the vote, you might win in the normal system, but that doesn't mean a majority of people really prefer you. So in this system, we first total up the first place votes for everybody. And if no one gets more than 50%, then, as you said, the candidate who has the fewest first place votes is eliminated. And the votes of those voters go to the person they ranked second on their ballots. And this process continues. You eliminate the lowest vote getter in each round until one candidate has a majority of the votes. And that person then becomes the winner of the race and the nominee for the Democrats for mayor.
So could that be a potential critique of the system, that you're in a sense, by redistributing the votes of the candidate who's removed from the race, that it effectively gives those voters a greater power in the second count?
No, I don't think that's an appropriate criticism. I mean, every voter has exactly the same amount of power. Every voter has the opportunity to vote for five candidates in order of preference. And if your candidate's eliminated, then you have your second, you know, the second preference gets your vote. I don't think that gives any people more power than anybody else. My vote in the second round is still present. If I voted for the candidate who comes out ahead in the first round, my vote for that candidate is still there in the second round, just like everybody else's vote is. So I don't think anyone has any more power than anyone else. That would be unconstitutional if it really amounted to something in which some voters had more power than others.
I guess I'm thinking you could make your first choice someone who you just, you know, have a candidate who's outlandish. You know, sometimes here on the ballot in California, we get candidates who don't really have any intention of winning. It's sort of self-promotion. It's a performance vehicle, so to speak. So you could vote for that person as your number one, you know, knowing they're going to be eliminated and knowing that your number two choice then is going to be the one really counted.
Yes. And a good example to explain part of the appeal of the system is that, you know, let's say you're a moderate Democratic voter and there are three moderate candidates you like, and you don't exactly have a strong preference between them. You don't know which of them is most likely to be effective in competing, but you don't have to choose between them under this system. You can rank all three of them. Or similarly, if you're a progressive Democrat, you don't have to choose between competing progressive candidates. You can rank all of them in order, your vote will keep getting transferred to another progressive candidate if the one you prefer as your first preference is no longer in the running.
We're talking with NYU School of Law professor Rick Pildes. His specialty is constitutional law. I invite your questions about ranked choice voting, which New York is using for the first time to decide its mayoral race. Today, the final day of voting in New York, could be weeks before we know who wins the Democratic primary. We're at 866-893-KPECC or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Shelley Banjo, New York Bureau Chief for Bloomberg, with us now. Shelley, thank you very much for joining us. At this point, who are the expected leading candidates?
Hi, yeah, thanks so much for having me. Right now, the leading candidates have been Eric Adams, who's the Brooklyn Borough President, 22-year-old cop, after him, it's kind of a scrum going up and down in the polls over the last few weeks between the former city sanitation commissioner, Catherine Garcia, former presidential candidate, Andrew Yang, and civil rights lawyer, Maya Wiley.
And you've got diverse candidates who are considered to be the front runners. Has race played much of an overt factor in the race?
Absolutely. This is the most diverse slate of candidates New York City will ever have and that has ever had. And
maybe the most ever. It's hard to be more diverse than this list of candidates.
Absolutely. I mean, chances are we'll get results back and it will be the leading candidate will either be a female, it will be a Black man or an Asian man. And, you know, the New York City has had 109 mayors, 108 of which have been white men. We had one black mayor, David Dinkins. So, you know, it certainly has been notable about the diverse field and also race and equality and, you know, this kind of uneven approach to rebuilding after the pandemic has been center stage, as well as issues like policing and, you know, how do you keep crime down in a city like New York without disproportionately impacting people of color?
And on the Democratic side, are there any that are running as moderates or are all of them running, trying to appeal to the progressive wing of the party?
All of the top three candidates right now that have been leading in the polls have been striking a more moderate tone, a non-ideological tone, and a break from the last 8 years of a mayor, Bill de Blasio, who's the current mayor of New York City and who is term limited. And I think the reason is because a lot of people are looking around, we're coming out of this pandemic and they see, you know, trash on the street or rats in the street or crime that has gone up. And, you know, this really yearning you've seen among voters for someone who is just going to get the city back on track. You know, the big caveat to that is one of the leading candidates, Maya Wiley, who, you know, is, you know, what worked for Bill de Blasio and is trying to, you know, keep some of that going, you know, in her run.
We're talking with Bloomberg News New York Bureau Chief Shelley Banjo joining us to talk about the field in the New York mayor's race. He has outgoing Mayor de Blasio, whose term limited, seemingly had much of an effect on the race. And to what extent has he weighed in?
He hasn't really. So he hasn't said who he's going to vote. And, you know, there have been private conversations that he has had that have been reported in the media about people that he might favor. But he hasn't weighed in, and probably for good reason, because his popularity has not been that high in New York City. And so any kind of endorsement by him is not necessarily a good thing for a lot of, or not seen as a good thing by a lot of the candidates.
Democrats outnumber Republicans several times over in the city of New York. There are two GOP candidates, Fernando Mateo, activist and founder of the New York State Federation of Taxi Drivers, and longtime New York figure Curtis Sliwa, who founded the Guardian Angels Crime Prevention Group. Is there any way it's seen that a potential Republican could win? There have been, of course, a couple of prominent Republicans in New York City's past as mayor, including Michael Bloomberg and Rudy Giuliani. But this time around, is that thought to be even a possibility?
Not really. I mean, there have been, as you mentioned, Rudy Giuliani, Republican mayors in New York and certainly in the history of New York. But at this time, at this point in time, with the electorate and the likely winner of the Democratic primary will go on to win the race. Democrats outnumber Republicans, as you mentioned, 7-1. And the money raised for the race just pales in comparison for these two Republican candidates. A lot of thousands of voters re-registered, thousands of Republican voters re-registered as Democrat voters just to be able to vote in this primary.
Nick, in the Fairfax district here, in our listing area, asks how the different precincts collect the votes, and then are the votes done by hand or by machine system?
So it's a good question, because in the city council races for New York, when they started using ranked choice voting, they didn't quite have the software yet. And so they were literally counting those votes by hand. There's just no way in a city like New York with so many people you can do that for the mayoral race. So there is a software that they got approved that they will be using for the election. But it will take a while, and not necessarily because of the software, but because of the absentee votes. There's about a fifth of the votes that are coming from absentee ballots, and that they can take up to 2 weeks to count.
All right. Shelley Banjo, thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate your talking about your ongoing coverage of the New York mayor's race. Shelley Banjo of Bloomberg News joining us. We continue with Professor of Constitutional Law at NYU, Rick Pildes. Professor, one of the criticisms of at least ranked choices as it's being conducted in New York, I've seen, is the concern about the lack of access to how the subsequent counts are carried out. That's essentially all done by computer, and that potentially raises suspicions about how the votes are being reassigned through each round of ranked choice voting. Can you speak to that concern?
Yes. So first of all, we do have experience with ranked choice voting in a number of cities and the state of Maine, which have been using it for a handful of years in different places. And all the survey data suggests that voters are pretty content with the system once they start using it and get familiar with it. There's going to be a great deal of transparency about the counting process. So in each round, we call them rounds, when a candidate is eliminated and their second choice votes become redistributed, we will have the information about exactly which candidates are getting which votes and what percentages and all of that. So we use machines or systems to tabulate normal in-person voting also. That's not done by hand. And so I think that people do have to get comfortable and familiar with the system. It's obviously something that's new for most people, but certainly the track record of it so far, at least, has been pretty broad acceptance of the process once it's in place. Now, I will say there is some concern about how long this process might go on in New York, and we had bad experiences in the primaries with how long things took. So if this gets dragged out much, much longer than anticipated, that could raise concerns among voters with the process. But I don't anticipate that happening. And I think there will be a lot of transparency.
Yeah, and they can't. Yeah, I mean, you can't really obviously go to the next round of the vote until all of the vote by mail ballots have all been counted. Right. So it does.
Yes,
it kind of delays the process a bit.
Yes, and this is one of the issues in New York City. Our laws allow absentee ballots to come in up to 7 days after the election and be treated as valid votes. So, by definition, those ballots can't be processed and counted until they're in. And so that inevitably introduces some significant delay in the process, depending on how many of those absentee votes come in after Election Day and can't be counted until after Election Day.
Professor, thank you very much. Good to have you with us today on Air Talk.
Good to talk to you.
NYU School of Law, Professor of Constitutional Law, Rick Pildes, joining us on Air Talk on KPCC. I want to hear from our LGBTQ listeners who have played team sports in high school or in college or club sports. If you were out to your teammates, if you weren't out, how your sexual identity related to how you related with your teammates on the field. I'd like to hear about that. This in the wake of a prominent NFL player, plays for the Las Vegas Raiders, announcing yesterday that he's gay. He's got tremendous positive support on social media from fellow pros. But I'd like to hear from you if you're someone who is LGBTQ and played team sports, high school or college, how your sexuality factored into your relationships with your teammates. We're at 866-893-KPCC, 866-893-5722. We'll be back in just 1 minute.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. free and open to all. Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.